happening now. We want to welcome our viewers from across the United States and around the world. This is the EdTech Situation Room. Good morning, good day, good evening. This is EdTech Situation Room, episode number, I didn't even look, 314 on December 20th, 2023. My name is Jason Neifer. I am the executive director of the Montana Digital Academy, which is Montana's wonderful state virtual school located on the beautiful University of Montana campus right here in fabulous Western Montana. And joining me tonight, as always, good evening, Dr. Fryer. How are you tonight, kind sir?
Jason, I am doing well. I'm excited to get to join you over the holidays. I think we'll take next week off, but I'm here in Charlotte, North Carolina, where I am a middle school media literacy and STEM teacher, and continuing to be awed by the AI tools that we have at our fingertips, but enjoying the holiday break and looking forward to continuing to have some time off. So thank you for doing the lion's share of link sharing in our document.
My pleasure to help out in that way. So Dr. Fryer, I don't think tonight's about the Christmas break, although I kind of wish it was, but what do we have on tap for tonight?
Well, the truth is we could talk about whatever we want because no one's paying us or, you know, well, we do have two live viewers, actually. So hello, if you're there live. We're going to talk about the tech news. So we gather most Wednesday nights to spend an hour basically going over a host of different links that you can find at edtechsr.com/links. And we are starting to categorize the AI links because there are so many. So our AI subcategories tonight, which we will not cover in, ever completely, but AI ethics and social impact, AI technology and innovations, AI policy and regulation, AI disinformation and bad actors, and AI experiments or experimentations. And then we've also got a few articles under privacy, Apple, Google, software, security, miscellaneous, and we'll have some Geeks of the Week. And it looks like Dr. Neifer may even have more than one Geek of the Week, ladies and gentlemen. So I know everyone's going to watch.
Absolutely wild. I've taken a cue from you, Dr. Fryer. So okay. I've always hey, followed the rule, do what Dr. Fryer does.
No, it's just we make our own rules here. So
outstanding. Well, should we do a couple of the fun stuff pieces before we jump into AI Week?
You bet. Where do you want to start?
Here's a wacky one. And I'm almost certain either you've experienced this yourself or someone you know has experienced this, but Search Engine Land had a fascinating article on December 15th that says, marketing giant admits it listens to your conversations to sell targeted ads. And according to Nicholas Edgius, who is the reporter in question here, apparently, so the quoting from the article, leading U.S. marketing company Cox Media Group has reportedly admitted to monitoring conversations for the purpose of targeted advertising. Working with renowned brands like CBS, Fox News, and ESPN, CMG has allegedly been promoting its ability to eavesdrop on customers through microphones and smart TVs, and smart speakers. The agency has coined this capability active listening, which makes it sound kind of charming or like an educational phenomenon, and has been actively pitching this service to its advertisers, showcasing the feature on its website, reports 404 Media, which is a pretty good media website as well. And I got to say, like, the way I used to describe this and admittedly, this is a very naive way of putting this, but the way I used to describe this when I talk to people is that I've experienced that phenomenon as well, but I've always assumed two things. And the first one is that what you talk about is likely to be what you're searching on the internet, right? So if you are talking about buying a pair of, you know, new hiking boots, chances are you are probably doing some searching, maybe not even hiking boots directly, but they know enough about us and our shopping patterns that I could see that making a difference. And the second thing I said is that there's just no way that corporate America is going to be able to get away from that because the outrage will be huge. And so here I am with this article. And again, these are all claims, right? And in fact, a spokesperson for Cox Media Group said they do not directly listen to conversations or access anything beyond anonymized aggregated data used strictly for ad targeting, although it's hard to target ads if they don't know something about you, right? So that does mean they're listening, but holy dog, is this a big old article. And I mean, Search Engine Land's a well-respected longtime source for the kind of marketing and nerd community, but how this is not the front page of the New York Times is absolutely beyond me.
So I just asked ChatGPT to fact check this. And ChatGPT is saying, the claim that Cox Media Group is using active listening technology is indeed true and has been reported by multiple sources. The article itself links to a 404 Media article. This is something that people have talked about for a long, long time, and multiple pundits, gurus, experts, as well as corporate people have repeatedly said, no, your smartphone doesn't listen. No, it's just it's just a coincidence. You just happen to be interested in this thing because if we did an informal study and we took 10 people and we said, have you ever had a creepy thing happen where you were talking about something and then you looked at your smartphone and suddenly there was an ad for that thing? I bet that's happened to at least 50% or more people. A lot of people I know of have had that experience. And so even though you've had the denials, this is the first time I've seen an article like this evidently corroborating what a lot of people believe is true. So this is, I mean, I want to say it's extraordinary in that I haven't read an article that's verifying it before. But like you said, it's par for the course for the surveillance capitalism media landscape in which we live. So.
Yeah, totally. And it's funny because I that's exactly the phrase that went through my head when I first read this, Wes, was you saying exactly that, because this has been a long time drumbeat for Dr. Fryer. But, you know, I'm just tired of it. Right. Right. We got to figure out some big, thick lines here, and we've relied on industry. They're not doing it. I know regulation's problematic, but not everything needs to be a sales pitch in this world. Right. And, it's wild to me that we're running around talking about how important, you know, like personal finance literacy is, financial literacy is, in a world that's just desperately trying you to get more, buy more crap. And, you know, I am an active engager in the capitalist lifestyle, right? So I don't want to make it sound like that I'm, you know, ready to hit the woods and start making everything out of my own carved wood or anything. But I mean, the Wi-Fi problems alone. But the bottom line is that, you know, this that's pretty darn dystopian, if you ask me. And yeah.
Betsy is joining us live and says that, yes, she saw an ad for wedding dresses after a colleague mentioned it during a Zoom call. So, and she had not searched for that. Yeah, that would be an interesting action research. No, I don't know if that's action research, just like citizen journalism research, but like, you know, pick 10 of your relatives over the winter holidays and ask them, have you had this kind of creepy situation happen, and report back. So I think I'll do that. I think I'll do that with my sister and family, who will not necessarily be representative of America, but anyway, we'll be hanging out with them and some of their neighbors and things like that. This will connect to a Geek of the Week that I have. Wasn't there some kind of phone that was called, it was basically the phone that didn't track you? Do you remember this? I think we talked about this years ago, but it died. Like it didn't have traction. So.
Like a black phone or something.
That's what I Googled, and there's a movie called that. But yeah, it was something like that. The phone.
Well, and here's an example. Like, there is an operating system that you can install on Android phones. So it would be something like, Android phones. Sometimes you can do this easily, sometimes you can't, but you can install, alternative versions of Android. This one's called Graphene OS, that does, apparently exactly that. The private and secure mobile operating system with Android app compatibility, talking is hard tonight, developed as a nonprofit open source project. So, and with no Google apps or services, which of course is the most important piece there from a privacy standpoint. But yeah, I know. I don't want to over panic or anything about this, mostly because it just exhausts me, right? But wow, not a super great dealio.
Yeah. You know, the weirdest thing about using ChatGPT when it's connected to the web is that it goes to Bing first. You know, that just doesn't inspire confidence. I'll just say that.
No, it doesn't. And, we're such snobs, Dr. Farrar. And certainly not the people's search engine, if you ask me. But, okay, so I thought I'd share that one. Do you want to jump to one?
Sure. Let's see. Why don't we go down to security? This is wild. This is the New Yorker on December 19th, and you do get some free articles if you haven't read a whole lot of them, which incidentally is a good reason to have another browser, because sometimes you can get additional articles when you're on a different browser that has different cookie settings. It's called The Disturbing Impact of the Cyber Attack at the British Library. Now, I didn't realize this had happened. I don't think we covered this article, but there was a pretty devastating attack that, I mean, the British Library is an incredible resource. Think Library of Congress, but maybe even wider and deeper and bigger. And so the author, Sam Knight, is telling about the hack that happened back in October, on October 28th. And basically the impact that it's having, which is to almost bring every bit of research that requires a digital connection to a standstill at the library. They don't use the Dewey Decimal System or some other standard kind of system. They have a unique proprietary system. And there are just, not just thousands, but millions of different artifacts of and resources and things. And it said, the potential is basically people are learning to do some old school research. But the quote here is, you can access everything, but you can't actually get to anything. Oh no, you can access everything, but you can't access anything. Yeah, in other words, it's all there, but you can't find it because of how. And there's a book, which I have a short story. I had not heard this by Jorge Luis Borges. I'm probably saying his name wrong. The Library of Babel, and it was basic. It's basically when the card catalog goes away. And so anyway, this is the reality that's happened. And so it's, of course, ransomware. And I think they want, $750,000 or something. And some people thought, well, maybe we should pay it. They don't know exactly where the group is originating. It starts with, they think it might be coming from Russia. What is it called? Anyway, it's a hacker group. And, these groups are continuing to, it's called RYSIDA, RHYSIDA. It certainly makes me happy that I'm not responsible for the cybersecurity of any kind of significant organization, right? Because, wow, just a crippling cyber attack. And there's just a ton. I think there's a whole database of doctoral dissertations that go back over 100 years that are completely offline and not accessible. So, it just seems like a nightmare. Had you heard about this? And
no, any thoughts I haven't heard about this it? At all. And it's both shocking and sad.
Yeah. Well, similar to your article, it's not like unheard of, right? Because we're frequently do talk about things relating to security and cyber attacks, and schools are affected by ransomware attacks, just like hospitals and other kinds of organizations. But anyway, that was some news that I had missed, and just seemed. Back up your stuff, folks. Keep good passwords. And if you're in an organization, in addition to having, insurance, because they said that they're liable, I guess, for the information that was lost. And it just, anyway, but the bottom line is, are they going to lose it? Are you going to lose data? So on that note, we are making great progress. We're within 8 episodes of the past year of podcasts being restored on edtechsr.com. So, hopefully, I would say with confidence, because we're going to take next week off, that by our next show, they'll all be updated. And some of that will be powered by ChatGPT, which we can talk about under experimentation. So, all right, where next before we jump into the AI?
Well, let's do a couple quick fun things here. The Google search trends for 2023 has been released from our friends at the Googles, and it's you know, fairly predictable, but it's a really great zeitgeist, I think, which is what they used to call this report, about what's going on in our world. And what's always interesting to me is that, you know, I like to think I have my, you know, fingers on the pulse of popular culture, but I always find new films, new television shows that aren't really ringing my bell, that I go and look up and sometimes lead me to a, lead me to a new thing to take a look at. So,
even recipes. I didn't know they had recipes.
Yeah. I saw that too. Yeah. It's pretty great. So I just thought it was an interesting piece, and I looked earlier and I don't think I saw this. Oh yeah. And you can also break it down. So this is you're looking at the global trend, and then you can bring, into individual countries, although there's a huge list of countries they don't cover here. Algeria, Belarus, China, Costa Rica, Denmark, Ecuador, Iraq is unavailable, Palestine, Russia. And I wonder if that's laws or unavailability of the tools. But in the United States, interesting enough, the recipes are a little different. They are, and of course now I can't find the recipes.
It's just on the right. Very compelling. Side.
Very compelling. There we go. The Grimace Shake. Oh, good. I'm glad that made it. Actually, lasagna soup, which is, I've seen a couple good recipes for that. Chicken cobbler, black cake, and pumtini. Which apparently, I don't really know what that is. Wow. So, very popular in Oregon, it looks like. But yeah, these are always a great fun. And I used to use these, when I was a social studies teacher, to kind of just start discussion in the new year, right? Like this was, and I think it's a really great exercise. The idea being that, you know, this is what was popular last year. Why was it popular? Like what world events inspired these things? And then, what do you think next year's is going to be? And the very last year I did this with world geography students, actually wrote down our predictions, and then I took a job in another another organization. So I didn't get to do what I planned to do there. But, of course, very interesting, and I also think a pretty wonderful way to bring current events in your classroom in a pretty fun and interesting way.
Also, and it's right at the top, did you watch the video for the past 25 years of search?
No, I didn't see that there's a
video. It's awesome.
There.
Yeah, at the top of the page, it says Year in Search 2023. I actually saw this as an ad on Apple TV, and one of the rare times I like went ahead and watched the whole ad. But it's called Google 25 Years in Search, the Most Searched. And I'm pretty sure this is the one. And it really, you know, 25 years, and what's also so, of course, this puts visuals with a lot of the statistics that you're going to be able to get scrolling through and clicking through that list. I'm sure share this as a Wonderlink with my students when we start the new semester in January. I wonder what this is looking like for ChatGPT, right? Because I am, you know, continuing to experiment with, well, let me just go directly to ChatGPT on my phone. Instead of Googling, my wife, you know, asked me to, you know, yesterday or today, because I needed to know, we have a new vehicle or used vehicle, and you can put the, you know, garage door opener, you can program your rearview mirror to do that. And I wanted to know how to do it. I just asked ChatGPT, boom, it told me how to do it. I did it right away. And she said, why didn't you just Google that? And I said, well, I wanted to see what it would say, but it gave me the answer and I didn't have to scroll through things or look at videos or whatever. I mean, I just got the answer and it worked. Anyway, so I wonder what AI looks like for the same kind of search trends.
It's very funny that you should mention that, Dr. Fryer, because what I did was I actually took all of our links from 2023 and I asked Claude, because ChatGPT, and I'm not joking here, was too lazy to do it for me. It just kept saying that.
You can argue with it and sometimes win, though.
Yes, once in a while, which, by the way, annoys the ever-loving stuff out of me. But I asked Claude to take a look at all of our links this year and come up with I used Spotify Wrapped as my model for that. And so, it did say, unfortunately, I do not have access to the full text of the articles mentioned in the document, but from the brief descriptions of titles, It seems the articles cover a wide range of topics, including AI, social media, online platforms, security, hardware, Google products, Apple products, Microsoft News, and more. Without the four articles, I cannot analyze the content with detailed statistics. However, I have some observations based on the titles of the articles. So our most popular topic this year was AI. Artificial intelligence, right? With at least 30 plus specific articles mentioned, although I think that number is probably a little shy.
Oh, yeah.
This included coverage on ChatGPT, AI moderation, implications for various industries, policy issues, and ethical concerns. Our second big topic was social media with online platforms like Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, etc. Also featuring predominantly with over 20 articles highlighted. Content spans platform changes, content moderation issues, pending regulation, and mental health impacts, which sounds about right. Google and Microsoft developments receive significant attention as leaders in AI search, cloud services, and more. Apple products also were regularly included, which sounds about right. Multiple articles relate to security, privacy, data protection, with around 10 specifically called out for each topic. And additional topics include hardware sector changes, copyright issues, censorship news, media literacy efforts, conspiracy theories, China, and data controls, and more. So in summary, AI is and its rapid evolving impact seems a dominant theme on the provided show notes. This is intermixed with coverage on leading tech platforms like Twitter and TikTok, as they also relate to AI usage. So, cool stuff, for sure, but I thought that was a pretty interesting way. And it's funny because you probably noticed that after Wrapped was released this year by Spotify, a lot of people have jumped on the Wrapped bandwagon to provide that data for their website, which I think is a brilliant marketing move because, everyone just talks about Spotify for, several days after that occurs. But I'll tell you, it's something I'm working on too in marketing my organization, because we're working on a report it's going to be obviously a little less than that, but we're really using it as an opportunity to kind of redefine, how we present data, because it's such a compelling way to look at some of the novelty inside of these reports. So.
Is it okay if I jump to one of the experimentations for AI, which kind of
let's do it, because I would love to talk about that too. So go ahead.
Okay, well, here's the EdTech SR podcast summary and title generator, which is basically post-production. I summarize this by saying, uses a YouTube transcript to generate a short podcast summary following previous human-written examples, as well as suggest 5 possible 3-word show titles based on content. Also, generates a visualization image to use as podcast episode show art. And if anybody wants, well, I can give the direct link. The most current, which is, like I said, I've got 8 more shows to publish. But our show from September 27th is episode 306. That's the last one that we have on our website right now. And the quality of this summary, which I really didn't edit massage, this whole fall, I've been experimenting with different tools to try and just grab the auto-generated transcript of our shows and try and, save myself some time and also see what AI can do. Well, this is, again, a custom GPT, so you have to be subscribed to ChatGPT in order to do this. And I'd be interested, Jason, if you can see the full configuration. I made it public. You have to make your profile. You have to tweak, share some stuff about your profile in order to make your profile public and make this publicly browsable. But anyway, I've got, fairly extensive instructions and steps. And I originally wanted it to go visit the youtubetranscript.com to basically just say, what's the YouTube, link, but that it won't do that. And I've been working, trying to get it to do other things, but if I give it a file, then it can work with it. So I just, copy the transcript myself and then upload that file as a text file. And then it does all of these things. And I have 4 different previous examples of episode summaries that I think those are all ones that I just wrote myself by hand. And it is amazing. And the quality of the analysis, just like you were describing there with the topics and the summarization, like it's not hallucinating. Like it's doing a good job parsing over an hour of transcript and really honing in on the key ideas and getting specific details. So we've talked about this over and over again, but one of the things that I think all of us, especially as educators, but it's probably true of just about anyone in society who's literate and wants to remain literate. We need to play with these tools, especially in a domain that we have knowledge about, because then you can be a better judge of that's a Fruit Loop idea. That's from left field. You know, that's a hallucination. Or you can be like, wow, that just did an incredible job, you know, summarizing whatever it was. I was just sharing this with my wife tonight because I've got something else that didn't work yet, but I'm going to keep working on it. And I was like, we can take whatever data file we want. It could have hundreds of lines. It could have thousands of lines. And then just, you know, the critical thinking of being able to say, take this information, take this data, massage it in this way, analyze it in this way. It's incredible.
It really is. Yeah. And while we're talking about experimentations, by the way, we've talked a little bit about, you know, custom GPT creation. I am absolutely convinced now that this is really the way right now, right? There are some tool sets being developed that I think are universally pretty useful to teachers. Actually, we probably should report this as an article. Magic School has announced that they will have a paid tier starting in January. I did take advantage of the first year discount.
Who's the
Magic
paid tier?
Magic School. You play with Magic School yet?
No.
Oh, Wes, how have I not mentioned this? Part of it's because I spent too much of my time talking about AI with everyone. So Magic School is and I don't know which language model it's based on. My guess is that it utilizes GPT-4, but Magic School is basically a tool set for educators that is AI based. And every time you hear, and I really, really haven't been real wild about the whole notion of teacher hacks, especially in the last couple of years, because I think it minimizes sometimes the complexity of our jobs. But the Magic School basically is a chat model. It does have a model you can talk to that's called like Reina or something, but they have 24 tools, everything from student work feedback to text rewriter to lesson planning, email family generator, informational text generator, standards unpacker. So in other words, it's GPTs or some kind of GPT model or large language model, but it has training data on it so that it does the job for you without you having to craft a masterful prompt. There's a free tier for it, and starting in January, they will have a paid tier, and they're also working on a school version of this as well. So what I paid for was 1 year of it. It cost me, I think it was just $40 because I had an existing account. So, and there will be a free version available forever, and then you can do school versions of it as well. But that, ignoring this tool for a second, like if you have really specialized needs or if you're real picky, I think building your own GPT makes a ton of sense, right? And you do have to pay for one of the higher tiers, whether it's if you're going to OpenAI, it's GPT-4. If you're using Poe, it's the $20 Poe tier that allows you to create your own custom models. But what I love about the custom model piece is that, you know, it allows you to really finely tweak. But my experimentation this week, and there's an article about this, and I know I've mentioned this tool before, but it really rocketed ahead in my mind of functionality. It's Google's Notebook LM project. And notebooklm.google.com is the webpage, and it's still a incredibly simple interface, but in the best way. And what Notebook LM allows you to do is create a notebook, and then you can share with it up to 20 resources, or 20 sources. And that's everything from a full Google document to a PDF or just plain text that you're copying and pasting. And so as an example of this, I'm working on a project for work. I'm going to write a course from scratch over the next 6 months, which is usually a very time-consuming process. And I'm setting up some rules about how I can use AI to do that. I will use open source training materials for geography, because that's the course I'm writing is High School World Geography. But I wanted to be able, To, you know, start to think about ways that I want to teach this class using, you know, a lot of social studies pedagogy has evolved quite a bit in the last 15 years. Those in the space will probably have heard of the C3 framework, and more inquiry-based lesson planning. And so I wanted to be able to, you know, take documents and help it become a brainstorm. So I uploaded 19 different documents. It's everything from studies about engagement in social studies classes to social studies methods books to several standards books, a couple of interesting articles about how to generate or to help students get a foundation in the content before they go and explore.
Basically, so, you're giving it a PhD in online hybrid pedagogy or whatever.
That's exactly it, right? And I also created a large document that was full of training data from my own experiences, some research articles, some summaries of books that I've read, some summaries I had ChatGPT write for me. And now I have a what I call geography pedagogy, a notebook LM that I can ask questions to, or I can have it generate materials. And it's wild. And if you are a student taking any kind of class this coming semester, whether you're a graduate student or you have, actually, I think you have to be 18 to do this, but I'm pretty sure you probably lied about your age if you're on Google anyways. But the bottom line is that, like, this would have been such a next generation holy dog game changer, especially in my undergraduate times. But, you know, if you can find a copy of your textbook, put that in here. If you can find a copy of the syllabus, put that in here. You can put a copy of all the articles that maybe a professor assigns to you, that put that in there. And then you can ask it to make study materials for you. You can ask it to create, it quiz you. You can ask it to make connections between those materials. And it's unreal. And it's really kind of like training your own mini model. And by the way, Google Gemini Pro, which is the latest release from them, that's somewhere between ChatGPT 3.5 and ChatGPT 4, that's what powers not only Bard now, but also Notebook LM. So it's a really sweet tool set.
I'm trying to remember which Star Trek it is. It's a Chris Pine as Captain Kirk. Might have been 2009 Star Trek. But there's a scene in there near the beginning where, and I think it's Spock as a child, and he's in this immersive sort of IMAX-ish, you know, like room. But like where we are quickly going is into that environment where we'll be able to be in an immersive, you know, room of screens, and we're going to be able to talk and, you know, okay, let's go into this lesson and, you know, show me this visually and ask me this. And it's not just going to be watching the movie. It's going to be, it can be highly interactive.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, it's wild. And
so we kicked around the idea of maybe doing an online EdTech playdate around AI tools. If we could find a date to do that, say after Christmas, you know, I think a smackdown with a few different apps would be good maybe to start. But then you're playing with so many different tools, like spending a little time playing with some of these, I don't know. I need to do that myself, but I don't know. I think it would be
too much. I mean, that's part of the problem.
It is, but that's where the idea of the play date comes in to say there's so much. Let's pick some of the most powerful, amazing, some of the tools with the most potential, and let's play with it a little bit and share and teach each other what we're learning. So anyway, we'll continue that conversation offline to see if we can find the date to do that. Man, I think I just did it again. Have you made the mistake of cutting jalapenos and then rubbing your eyes?
Yes, I have made that mistake.
Oh my gosh.
Just once.
Well, sadly, I've done that more than once, and I did it the other night. It was horrible. I don't know if it was just the jalapenos I had, but anyway, I'm not going to be completely wiped out, but that is not a fun thing to do in the middle of your podcast. Okay. Wow. That's about half the show. What else do you want to talk about?
Yeah, well, let's dig into some, you know, wild. And by the way, we've got some great articles here, but there have been so many kind of wild tools released in the last week. A bunch of music generators. I did spend some time in Microsoft Copilot this week, which is substantially better than the last time I used the tool, which is interesting to me because early days I found it to be a little sophomoric and not really up to the quality of other available opportunities. That my mind's been largely changed in the last couple of days. But let's do this interesting article from the New York Times. Cheating fears over ChatGPT were overblown, new research suggests. So this article is referring to, I believe, the Stanford study that was out at the end of October. And basically, they do, in surveys of this year of more than 40 U.S. high schools, some 60 to 70% of students say they've recently engaged in cheating, about the same percent as in previous years, Stanford education researcher said. There was a panic that these AI models would allow a whole new way of doing something that could be constructed as cheating. These folks, senior lecturer at Stanford, who has surveyed high school students for more than a decade through an education nonprofit she co-founded, but we're just not seeing that change in the data. So interesting, right?
Interesting. Also, they point out that average income for the household was strongly correlated to whether or not the kids had heard about ChatGPT. So if they were from a household with an annual income of $75,000 or more, 75% of them had heard of ChatGPT. And if they came from a household that had less than $30,000 in annual income, just 41%. So that's interesting.
Yeah, it is. And this is also the reason why that at some point, maybe not that far away, blocking large language models, and I see I'm all comfortable here and not even in the frame anymore, but large language models, blocking them becomes an issue of equity at some point, right?
And it absolutely does. Yes.
You know, and in fact, it's interesting because I've had this conversation with a lot of parents, and you know, a lot of them are amazed by these technologies as well, and they're scared of these technologies. There's obviously, you know, incredible amounts of questions about the future of labor, particularly, you know, the kinds of jobs that have been stereotypically pushed in the last 25 years as the jobs of the future. But you know, these conversations really need to be happening in schools and in classrooms. And my guess is that no matter what you teach or who you teach, that there's some angle here to talk about. But I guess the other thing I would also say, though, is that while it's interesting to me that the number hasn't shifted all that much in this year's administration of Stanford survey, the fact that we're talking about 60 to 70% of students consistently report cheating recently, I mean, it just tells you this is not a ChatGPT problem. This is a problem we have in education in general. And I think we need to be, you know, incredibly thoughtful about, you know, just blaming this technology for it, because I think we've had some issues for a long time, which is what Ethan Mullett's point was earlier this year in his article about the homework apocalypse, because, you know, there's been a lot of evidence for some time now that students are just Googling up answers to homework assignments that may have a lot of good reasoning behind them. But in the end, if the students are not doing them, they're just copying and pasting the results of a search engine. You're losing that learning opportunity. And I'm not casting judgment on the assignment itself, because I do think that a lot of traditional learning environments that people tend to look down their nose at do have a lot of research behind them, but not if the best we're going to be able to do or the best students are willing to do is to go and copy answers off of Google search.
I think we need to avoid just talking about the articles that reinforce existing ideas about AI.
Yeah.
And at the risk of sharing one of those articles, but it's a new tool. Have you heard of haveibeentrained.com?
No, that's fascinating.
Okay, so this was referenced in an article. I'm sure you're reading this. WCNC Charlotte from December 20th, local news outlet. The title is "Art Will Never Be the Same." Charlotte artist has her work stolen by AI. And now it's going to try to autoplay a video, which I need to pause. Not heard of this tool. Basically, I guess this is sort of a volunteer site to say, you know, find out if you've been scraped, but, and then maybe AI LLM tool creators will respect it. One of the things, in addition to in the third paragraph, it says she used the website haveibeentrained.com to search for her name and realized almost her entire portfolio had been scraped for the data set LAION-5B. Okay. I would predict that probably 0.0001% of readers have any idea what that is. I don't even know what that is. Is it something ChatGPT uses? Is it open source? Is it, you know, Bard? What the heck is that? And anyway, and so then there's a correlation. She says she's making less money, and she thinks that's because her stuff has been scraped, and therefore, you know, and now she's doing 3D art, which is harder for LLMs to copy. But anyway, I think, the quote is, whether you're an artist or not, it's coming for you next. It's already infiltrating administrative work. I know multiple friends whose family members have already lost their administrative jobs to ChatGPT. And so this is just, like I said, a local news source, but there was that article. And then I think the other headline was basically like, I don't know, 165,000 Charlotte, you know, jobs at risk for AI. So anyway,
the bottom line is that, I mean, I understand why a lot of artists are both very annoyed by this, but also, why they have fear of the future. It would not be hard. And in fact, it generates some of these images, right? It would not be hard, for example, to create AI-generated images that you can then upscale with an AI tool and then send off to, I think I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, those archive paintings from the U.S. Department of Agriculture with the paintings of fruit from the late 19th and early 20th century. My wife and I are going to put four of those up in our new kitchen. Because they're beautiful and they have a great story behind them. And, you know, that if we didn't have that archive available to us, it wouldn't be difficult to take someone's painting like that and train, like, I want paintings that look like this, but make it of, you know, starfruit, or make it of cherries, or make it of flathead cherries, a specific, you know, variety and a location of them, and to be able to do that. And now, that said, the internet, for better or for worse, has devalued a lot of that work already, because you can, without much ado at all, you know, find, I'm not even talking about like scraped images on Google Images. I'm talking about, you know, massive free stock art houses. And, you know, there's a really extraordinary amount of stuff that you can get on the internet today that would also, in a lot of cases, I think, you know, compete with artists and art. But yeah, I mean, we don't have any good answers to this yet, as far as I know.
Let me do two articles underneath the AI disinformation bad actors category, which again can also reinforce pre-existing, you know, perceptions. But anyway, this is Bellingcat. This is from October. This was October 16th. YouTube is auto-generating videos for songs advocating the expulsion of Muslims from India. We've talked before about, you know, the responsibility and importance of social media platforms having experts in local languages. You know, I think it's the Rohingya minority in Myanmar, faced a genocide that was largely stoked and encouraged on Facebook. And that whole chapter is a very bad one in terms of the failure of Facebook to step up to that. But these music videos, I guess there's a way that YouTube, we'll be able to generate these. And so anyway, this is something that YouTube is paying attention to. Bellingcat is, a very noted journalistic website, you know, for investigations that have really shed a lot of important light on a lot of things. And so that's a very respected source. But here's the one, and this is from 404 Media, which was quoted in that first article from Search Engine World or Search Engine Land, mm-hmm. That you quoted. And I've, you know, 404 Media is also, I perceive them to be a stout, you know, robust, excellent news source. The headline is, and this is from December 18th, Facebook is being overrun with stolen AI-generated images that people think are real. And so some of this dystopian future of AI where this content is being, you know, generated at scale and it's incredibly confusing to people and it's causing disruptions and it, you know, just causing a lot of bad stuff. Apparently that is happening. And the election's not here yet. So
yeah, it's not even the year of the election yet. So,
okay. You had some more positive stuff for us.
Let's see. No.
That's okay. You can share whatever you want. It doesn't have to be positive. It doesn't have to be positive.
Well, let me see. Well, okay. Let's maybe start talking about the wonder of these tools once again. So, Throp.com reports on December 5th that Microsoft Copilot's getting GPT-4 Turbo, the new DALL-E 3 model, and more. And that actually, I did post this on my Mastodon account because I am not a much of a Twitter user anymore. But I saw a trend on the social medias where someone had created kind of a template. You can give out a URL that creates kind of like a Mad Lib style thing, but for the Microsoft Designer, which is backed by DALL-E 3. It's super cool. And so I created a Funko Pop version of Dr. Knifer today that is pretty grand, and pretty great. But that led me down the rabbit hole of jumping back into, Copilot. And I have to say, there was a couple weird things today, but Microsoft Copilot, pretty solid. And I like it. They rebranded it Copilot as opposed to Bing because I think Bing AI sounded silly. But I do think that Microsoft is doing a pretty good job of putting together a relatively robust tool set that is pretty inexpensive, right? Like you get access to most of the models for free through the Microsoft Designer and also the Microsoft Copilot system.
Can you go back to what you were saying you created? Was it sort of a choose your own adventure, co-write a story?
It wasn't really a story. Let me show you. In fact, I'll send you a link, or put the link in, I don't know if you have, I'm sure you have some kind of Microsoft account somewhere, but, and then of course this is not, you can send a prompt to someone that is in essence that is kind of a fill in form. For
like a Mad Lib
generation, right? So, and I'll throw it here in private chat, Dr. Fryer, and then you can go from there. And so what it was that it created a Funko figure of a blank. They're looking for male, female, or something else, smiling, called your name, wearing a something like a t-shirt, a something like a hoodie, a something like a black leather jacket, or something like black or pants, and white Adidas trainers with black stripes. In this case, you can also describe the face. The Funko's display.
It's a Mad Lib.
Yeah, exactly. It's Mad Libs, but for but for the Microsoft Designer. And I created a Funko Pop of me today with just this that looked great. And in fact, my wife oftentimes scoffs at AI-generated imagery because that doesn't look anything like you. But I created my Funko Pop today, and I had to massage it a little bit. I am a somewhat stout gentleman, and oftentimes, you know, prompts like this, underappreciate my stoutness. And so, I had to, you know, say that, I was, stout, or I think I used slightly chubby, but wears it well, or something along those lines. And it did a pretty good job of coming up with that. So, even if you are not a Microsoft person, don't ignore them in this space because I think they're doing some cool stuff. And in a lot of ways, they are much more responsible for bringing AI to the masses than OpenAI is, because you can access, you know, effectively GPT-4 style responses without having to pay money for it.
It's almost like you can have a play date, but you separate it. Here's the gee whiz, wow, I'm amazed, I'm scared examples. And then here's the practical, hey, I saved myself an hour of work, you know, doing this or that. I think they're both valuable.
Well, and for me, like, the thing that makes this complicated, and I talk about this a lot, but I'm obviously quite engaged in the wonder of these tools. Right, you it doesn't take long to listen to me, and part of it is that I am a nerd, self-identified. I have been for a good 45 years now. So the bottom line is that I don't have a problem with that. And in fact, if anything, I live in a bit of a geeky lifestyle. But the and I am very, very charmed by these tools. Right. In fact, one of my very valued colleagues and friends accuses me of having a crush on AI, which is not that far from the truth, right? I do have a bit of crush on AI, as it turns out. It's unrequited love, unfortunately, at least the apps that I choose to use. But the bottom line is that's a pretty accurate statement. But one of the reasons why I want people to use these tools and to start experiencing them is because I don't think you really get it until you start using them. And then the next part of the conversation is, yes, be impressed or scared or whatever your response to this is because of the power of the tools. And then let's start rolling up our sleeves and thinking about what this looks like in context of classrooms. That's the part that I am most concerned about, is that we can't get charmed by the wonder here. And again, don't get me wrong, the wonder's super sweet, but we just can't get charmed by it.
It occurs to me that would be a valuable thing to blog about. I know that's out of vogue, but, you know, just to reflect on your own perceptions of these tools as well as your own uses of them. And that if you wanted to think of a framework, I don't know, it's almost like, you know, stages of grief when people lose somebody in their life. It's not always true, but there are a series of stages that people go through. I wonder if you've encountered, or maybe Dr. Knifer, you could write and publish this, like, in psychologically confronting AI, the power of it and the impact that can have on your life. I wonder what the phases are that people are going to go through, and sort of, I wonder about the path that we want people, the path that would allow us to really leverage these tools effectively and well and ethically. Anyway, I wonder what that is, because a lot of people are still in the ignorant stage of, because I think it's like 25% of the United States adult population has used ChatGPT, like over 75% haven't. I saw that, I think, statistic this week. I don't know if that's representative and completely accurate, but anyway, there's a lot of folks that just have not used the tool yet. Anyway, just thoughts, because there's a lot to grapple with here.
There
like you said, the velocity of it. And if you haven't played with the tools, you know, that's one of the things that really reinforces and just hits you over the head with how powerful it is. You're like, oh my gosh, I was using Padlet, you know, a year ago, and it was creating these really crude drawings. And now look at it. And, you know, I was trying to use Midjourney and its text interface to be able to create images. And now I can use DALL-E right within ChatGPT-4. And I mean, I'm stunned frequently by the quality.
By the way, did you see that Midjourney is moving towards a non-Discord-based interface that they'll be rolling out in January?
I did not, but I think that's very wise, because that's a high bar to try to have, to say, hey, you gotta, you know, be Discord savvy to use our tool. Oh, okay.
We said it all. We just paused.
Well, yeah. Hey, go ahead.
You know, here's a wild one. I'll just throw out there. There is a startup that is called Channel One. And the reason why I'm entertained by that, do you remember Channel One from back in the day, Dr. Fryer?
I do.
For those of you that are in a younger teacher generation, Channel One was a thing back in the day, 20 years ago-ish, where schools would partner with Channel One, and they would buy televisions for all classrooms. And then once a day, they would play a channel, well, actually on demand, they would play a Channel One news show.
You got a free TV in every room of the school if you agreed to play in its entirety the little programming, which would include ads that they would make the kids watch.
Yeah, it was kind of like the internet, as it turns out. Here, have this stuff in exchange for ads. It was very controversial at the time. And I do recall in the early days of the internet that listening to someone complain about Channel One, the internet is based off that very principle, right? Do you understand that part? And so, yeah. But Channel One, which apparently is going to launch in 2024, is a personalized global news network that's powered entirely by generative AI. And apparently they take news and they have virtual anchors and they're going to broadcast 24/7. But it's personalized. So I think that means that you can, tell it what you like to watch or what news you want to hear about, and it will process that. And there is if I remember correctly, like a 20-minute, I watched about 5 minutes of it, 20-minute demo video that you can go through, and it shows you, what it's going to look like. And there's a mix of, like news footage, both video and still images with a virtual anchor talking in the background. There is, some interviews where an anchor will go to a taped interview, and they have kind of a back and forth. It just goes constantly, the anchors are AI generated. And it's funny because I heard AI generated voices described as soulless earlier this year, right? That no one will listen to a soulless anchor. But they may be right about that. In fact, there's some research about auto-generated voices used in context of accessibility in something like an online program that suggests that students just don't like them unless they absolutely need to have them. So in other words, if you have like a visual impairment, for example, when accessing content. But that, of course, is changing pretty dramatically. And this video is in some ways proof of that. I thought that the anchor voices seemed very natural, even if they are generated anchors.
I'm going to make a prediction. I predict that YouTube is going to have to institute account uploading limits because of auto generation capabilities.
Yep.
These tools are advancing so quickly. And, Destin, who does Smarter Every Day, probably 3 or 4 years ago at least, did a really remarkable series of videos. And part of what he was covering was how, algorithms, wasn't calling it AI at the time, were being used to, publish lots of different news articles and things. But I think that there's a term called the exoflood, which is just like, it's like a yodabyte. Like if you look at how, giga, tera, you just go on up the list. There's just so much information and video that's coming. I think that in part to deal with disinformation, I think that YouTube is going to have to impose some kind of limit.
Well, and Wes, I actually have a very practical example of this that's just happened to me in the last 24 hours. It's not YouTube, but like all people that are, kind of trying to track stuff over time, I have some Google alerts, and one of them is for my program name, the Montana Digital Academy. And during a meeting yesterday with some members of our team, someone said, oh, there's just a Google News alert about us. And like, oh, we were listed as one of the best schools in Montana by energyportal.eu. And so we clicked on the link, and sure enough, this is clearly auto-generated content, right? So summary, Montana's home to several exceptional schools and educational programs that provide students with high-quality education and nurturing learning environment, from prestigious universities to specialized vocational schools, Montana, blah, 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 blah. Introduction, and then Montana's University of Montana, Montana State University, Carroll College, Montana Tech, and then it mentions us in an FAQ at the bottom. So I'm like, well, both, that's weird. And then I start clicking around, and there are hundreds of articles on there, thousands probably, not about us per se, but here's one about Taco Bell, and here's one that's a recipe. But then if you look at the top of the menus, energyportal.eu is supposed to be or purports to be a news source for energy news. And if you click up all the things on top, it has AI-generated articles on nuclear, oil, solid-state batteries, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And as it turns out, I'm sure that they're doing that to get traffic from Google, right? But the point of this is actually to provide what I'm assuming is energy misinformation, right? Why else would you do this unless you're trying to put ads on there? But yeah, that's the same point with YouTube, right? At some point, which is starting to happen now with the web, we're going to get bombarded with absolutely junk content. And in some cases, that junk content will gain a following, right? That someone will figure that out. And the logarithmic thinking is that this is what people are clicking on, so this is what we'll make. And that's, again, pretty darn dystopian, if you ask me. But more importantly, like, that's media literacy fears to the nth degree.
On the positive, my Geek of the Week last week was the Dot Social podcast by Mike McHugh, mm-hmm. talking about ActivityPub and the Fediverse. And what they're trying to do is build the web that we want and we deserve, not the one that advertisers and marketers, you know, want to have, so that the Ready Player One dystopian vision of, you know, 95% of your screen is filled up with pop-up ads, you know, doesn't come to pass. And social media, you know, we have just much more robust tools to be able to filter the pollution, the advertising, the disinformation. So there's reason for optimism, but wow, it's a wild west.
Yep, totally. Well, Dr. Fryer, I see that we've just hit an hour. Shall we move to our Geeks of the Week?
Sounds good. I'll just do mine quickly. This is an alternative browser. Have you heard of Vivaldi before?
I have. In fact, I've got a colleague at work that prefers it.
Oh, really? Okay, cool. Well, I just learned about it through one of my social media feeds, and I've just been using it on the iPhone. As I mentioned earlier, you know, even just if a website like a news site sets a cookie and only lets you have a few number of free reads, and they're not like just tracking your IP address, it can be a way to get a few more free reads. You know, from that kind of a website. But the key about Vivaldi, and it's available desktop, iOS, and Android, is that it really is focused on privacy and blocking trackers and, you know, trying to move us closer to a world where everything we do is not, you know, recorded and sold. So check it out. I've got that as an alternative browser on my iPhone.
Awesome. Well, I'd like to share a couple links about Wordle, and we've talked about Wordle in the past year and the New York Times acquisition of Wordle, and I wanted to share these articles because I've become a bit of a Wordle fan. I wasn't very good at it at first, and so I kind of had a secret love-hate relationship with Wordle, but I kept doing it, and I got better at it over time, which, you know, the 50-year-old brain, it's exciting to know that you can get better at things if you practice, right? So I'm really excited about that. But there's two really great articles. The first one is the New York Times is an article from December 17th where they spill all the data tea on Wordle, and they show which starting words are most likely to get or to do well. They talk about some popular words that actually don't get very many returns according to the users. And if you're a Wordle nerd, or is that a nerdle? Then that would be a place to go. So, and then there was a really great article, in I think it was this week's Vanity Fair, and it talks about the New York Times and their big bet on games, because they, you know, their longtime game strategy has been Will Shortz, the editor of the New York Times crossword puzzle. He's also delightful as the puzzle master on NPR on Morning Edition on Sunday. But, you know, he has been a longtime, you know, a mainstay of the New York Times. And he, you know, he's also the editor of the puzzle of the New York Times. How cool is that? But they talk about the larger game strategy that the New York Times is working with, and they've been able to get a significant amount of traffic and subscriptions, particularly digitally, based on this. So if you are into the kind of whole notion of games, or secondarily, you've been kind of keeping an eye on the Wordle phenomenon, or if you are a Wordle nerdle, then please, that article is absolutely for you.
Awesome. Awesome. And I dropped in a gift link, and I'll put that in the show notes as well.
Oh, thank you.
New York Times. All right, sir. We did it again.
Yep. Well, Dr. Fryer, where can people find you on the interwebs?
I am continuing to post on a variety of social media platforms. You can find all of those links at westfryer.com/after. And my favorites are Facebook, LinkedIn, Mastodon, but Blue Sky and Threads are in there too. How about you?
I don't know, type Kniper into Google. I am working on, I will be having some sort of different web presence soon enough. But the main place is to find me on Mastodon. So, I'm at knife at mastodon. See, this is the problem with that is that
you have mastodon.cloud/ Thank you, at sir. Knife.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. But hey, this is not about me. It's about us. It's the Ethics Situation Room. We're a once a week podcast on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Mountain Time or 9 p.m. Eastern Time or sometime in the middle of the night UTC if you really need to check us out live from Europe. We are slowly reconstructing the podcast notion of our feed. But if you want to see us right away, the best place to do that is YouTube and YouTube and Facebook is the other platform.
Facebook too. Yeah. Archive there.
Feel free, to see us live there. And soon enough, we'll have our updated episodes being fed into the feed. Please join us live. It's great to have live viewers, and we love comments from the Peanut Gallery. It's really great to have that interaction. But otherwise, you know, find us elsewhere on the internet and stay connected. So we hope you stay safe, stay savvy. We will be off next week, so no podcast next Wednesday. Although keep an eye on our social feeds about a potential event next week online to talk about AI. And from both Dr. Fryer and myself and our families, we hope you have a wonderful holiday. Teachers, I saw the other day that we shouldn't be saying we made it to December. I didn't say it. You made it to December. Congratulations. Enjoy the time off. And I hope you have a wonderful holiday with you and your family.
We will see you in 2024.
Yeah. Good night.